Today we are very happy to host the call by Francesco Grillo, who is visiting from São Paulo, Brazil, from ICT and IFD. And he will speak about the 4-point conformal blocks and its conformal Cauchy density. Please, Francesco, go on.
Thanks, Enrico. Thanks for the invitation, the opportunity to give this talk. Indeed, I will speak about a recent paper we put out in collaboration with Paul Heslop from Durham University, which is based on a couple of years of work. And it's also based on previous work of Paul with his student Reza Dubari and other work by Paul Heslop and Paul Howe in the past. And the main topic is about conformal blocks, but there will be some mathematical aspects of conformal blocks, which when I started this project, I didn't know about. And they are very nice, and I will try to be right on time, so I can tell you also that aspect of this project. But to start with, let me start with the basics, and so a broad motivation, why the blocks and why diverse dimensions? Since after all, the Bootstrap program is already well developed under some aspects. So why do we insist on this? First of all, the idea is that if by some other means we compute correlators in a CFT, and this means they can be either perturbation theory, the Bootstrap program itself, integrability or dualities, then we can extract the data from these correlators simply by decomposing them in blocks and looking at the three-point function or amount of dimensions. And in this framework, correlators that are tied to my heart are the holographic correlators, because they which are correlators essentially you compute using ADS-CFT correspondence. These correlators, when you go beyond tree level, they give you, they offer you a special window into quantum gravity in ADS. And this is a subject that is started a couple of years ago and is a very rich subject with a very, which connects on one side the quantum gravity in ADS with string theory, and tries to answer essentially the big question of what should we expect from scattering amplitudes in quantum gravity in ADS, because this is the case we can compute using the CFT. And here I listed, so the best understood example in this subject is of course n equal 4 super Young Mills, which is dual to ADS 5 times S5, string theory on ADS 5 times S5. And here I just listed a number of topics. If people is interested in, they can look at the papers. and especially perhaps the simplest place where to look is this recent review on scattering amplitudes by Paul, chapter 8 of that subject's review. Now the point is that n equal 4 super Young Mills in four dimensions is a beautiful theory. It's special for many reasons. But ADS-CFT is more general than that. There are other examples of ADS-CFT. In particular, the 2,0 theory in six dimensions is dual to ADS-7 times S4. Similarly, the three-dimensional ABJM theory. So what about this, and what about holographic correlators in these cases? There are nice results at tree level that Taldai and Zhou computed, and what we the next step in that direction would be to go at one loop in the same way it was done in n equal 4. But to do so, one needs to probe more CFT data out of these three-level results. And to do that, one needs an efficient way to study the superconformal blocks. In particular, when I say going at one loop in quantum gravity in this ADS backgrounds, I really mean that we want to study the spectrum of KK modes on that background and understand how they, let's say, two particle operators flow in these correlators and, and what's their anomalous dimension, their three-point functions. So this is far beyond the simplest correlator that you can compute in these theories, which is the stress tensor multiplet, which probably has been already computed by Aldai and collaborators. I say this because when you look at the spectrum of KK modes, that is where you see essentially all the subtleties of quantum gravity going on. And if you don't know, in the case of N equal 4, all the subtlety came out where came into the form of some hidden symmetry in EDS5 times S5 that essentially says that you can think of this space as conformally flat to flat space in 10 dimension, and then there is a hidden conformal symmetry. That hidden conformal symmetry essentially fixes a lot of the one loop structure, actually at all loops. It fixes the leading log discontinuity at all loops. But then the details how to complete the leading log discontinuities into a full correlator, that depends on the details of the KK modes. So the punchline of what I'm saying is that to study quantum gravity in these spaces, one needs, first of all, to develop a systematic approach to superblocks, which implies studying both protected, since these are supersymmetric theories, implies studying both protected and long blocks. Now, of course, there is a history about superblocks, which comes from the past, especially from the work of Dolan and Osborne. And it was recognized from the very beginning that blocks, conformal blocks, they are related to symmetric functions. Even more recently, Chomeros, this very nice paper, pointed out that there is some superintegrability of the conformal blocks. They are really eigenfunctions of some Calogero-Moser-Lossaud and Hamiltonians for BC system, just extending some older work of Dolan and Osborne on the fact that you can understand the conformal blocks as eigenfunctions of certain operators. And these operators, they have BC, they are associated to BC type of root system. Now, hypergeometrics, they're the first things that comes to your mind, because when you think about the OPE, then that OPE is essentially an expansion over derivatives of operators when you bring together the two external operators. And therefore, it's natural that you end up with infinite sums, and therefore, very naively, it's natural that you end up with hypergeometrics. And this looks hard in general. But what I will try to convince you today is that there is a simple way to look at the problem of constructing conformal superconformal blocks, which is based on a different reasoning that I will explain in this talk. And the reasoning is essentially this. Conformal and superconformal blocks, they can be understood as a supersymmetric uplift of certain stable BC polynomial, which are related to the BC Jacobi polynomials, which are a famous family of polynomials. And that during the process of discovering this, and realizing that there was this stable BC polynomial in our project, we call them dual Jacobi polynomials, and I will also explain this name later on. So just to give you a flavor of what I mean by stable, since stable will be an important word in this talk, you can think of a function labeled by certain representation labels that for my talk will be given by a Young diagram, lambda with the underline. And then this function might be represented as a symmetric function of a certain number of variables. But if you want the function to be just labeled by the representation labels, then you would like to say that whenever you set to zero some of these variables, then you reduce to the same function in which you actually have the number of variables not set to zero, but still labeled by the same representation label lambda. So you can think of lambda, the simple case, just one box, and then this is just a sum over all the variables that you have. So when you set some of them to zero, you just find this function here on the right. And the stability property, actually what tells is that you can actually forget of writing all these variables here. You can just think that there are infinitely many variables. And then you simply go back to finitely many whenever you wish. So in fact, this stability will be an important property. And I would like to give you a spoiler, since I am at the beginning of the introduction, and that spoiler is about the superconformal Cauchy identity. So this has to do with the free theory. And also to motivate free theory, let me tell you this, that free theory is not an empty example or a simple example, because especially in this context of the holographic correlators, you are in a limit of the CFT that you're studying, in which generalized free theory is the starting point of every correlator you want to write down. And therefore, free theory already contains information about the three-point couplings of the leading operator exchanged. Of course, then when you add loops, this will be more complicated. There will be transcendental function. But let me just stick for the beginning to free theory. And if you also think that this is still a trivial example, let me tell you that since I mentioned at the beginning of a few slides ago, the case of n equal 4 and the indent symmetry that then helps you a lot when you construct the correlator at one loop. The indent symmetry in n equal 4 was already here. You just didn't know it. So you could have been even smarter than what Simon was and just find the indent symmetry here in free theory and then out of nothing construct all these correlators at the leading logarithmic discontinuity of the correlators, essentially with no effort. So it's a good thing to start from free theory, understand very well how to do this super conformal block decomposition in the case, and understand the structure of how it looks like. And so to understand the structure, the punchline of what we will do, we will be the following. So we will understand the decomposition of any free theory diagram, so in particular generalized free theory diagrams, in any dimension, out of a formula like this, right-hand side, left-hand side. Now, the left-hand side, I'm going to tell you probably in half an hour, is just a free theory diagram in disguise, in which this label beta is an integer, okay? This y and x are just my parameterization of the cross ratios. But then there are some extra variable s, and the free theory diagrams, they will appear whenever you set s to integer value, either 1 or 0. The amount of values that you set 1 or 0 depend on some k. Okay? And so k gives you essentially all the family of free theory diagrams that you can construct. And we'll understand this left-hand side as written as a decomposition of this form, in which this f will be later on my superconformal block. And this is essentially the conformal block coefficient associated to some representation here that I'm labeling with a Young diagram lambda. And this j here is again a polynomial, but depends on this variable s that I'm going to now set to 1 or 0 to get to my free theory correlator. So the point is that out of this formula, what we will learn at the end of the talk will be that the conformal partial weight decomposition of any free theory diagram is just given by an evaluation formula of certain Jacobi polynomials at integer values of their function s. And as I mentioned before, f will be a super block for a specific theory. Now, in the next slide, I'm going to tell you that the specific theory is labeled by two integer m and n, okay? So this function depends on m and n. Also, this function here depends on m and n. But here, there will be no sign on f and m, okay? So this is the same conformal partial weight coefficients, regardless of what supersymmetric theory you're looking for. And it just depends on the Young diagram for the representation you're exchanging that labeled the superconformal block. And the reason for this will be, in fact, stability. And the proof that I will put forward later on will be the following. So this is just an uplift, a supersymmetric uplift, in the same word I was using in the previous slides, of a very simple polynomial function like this, which is famously known to be decomposed into through this Cauchy identity for polynomials, in terms of simple polynomials, which in my talk would be Jack polynomials. And now, out of Jack polynomials, by stability, I will just uplift this to superconformal blocks and this to Jacobi polynomials. But the point is that all the supersymmetry will stay on this side of the equation, and this other side will just depend on the Young diagram. And therefore, in a sense, is a computation that you can even do in a bosonic theory regardless of supersymmetry. So I hope that the trailer was good. So since I already introduced some notation, in this formula there is a bunch of symbols, J, beta, theta, P. Let me be a little bit more specific. So the list of theories, supersymmetric theories that we'll consider will be this. So the parameter theta will be related to the space-time dimension of the theory by this simple rational factor, d minus 2 over 2. And M and N will label the type of conformal times a compact group that I'm looking at. So whenever M is turned on, I just have, and N is zero, I just have the usual conformal group in the dimension. Contrarily, when M is zero and N is turned on, I just have some compact group. And now the list of super theories that I will be discussing is as follows. So when theta equal one, we are in four dimensions. And this is, among these examples, you can find n equal four Subbie-Yamils, for example, or any other n equal two theory. And then in this case actually was already studied by Paul and Reza, his student, in 2015. And then the new cases where this idea of the superconformal Cauchy identity actually is very useful will be the one in six dimension and the one in three dimension, which in a sense they are dual to each other. And in particular, the theories that I will study will have such amount of supersymmetry. So I cannot lower to the minimum value of supersymmetry, but I need a starting value. Anyway, this covers, as I promised in the introduction, the 2.0 theory, and this covers ABJM. Then, since the theta parameter is related to the dimension, we will be able also to conjecture some conformal blocks for other exotic theories, like in five dimension, whenever you take theta equal 3/2, this will be some super conformal theory with F4 symmetry. Or in one dimension, whenever you take theta equal 2 over 3 and there is another F4, this will have n equal 8 supersymmetry. And lastly, there will be this one dimensional theory with theta equal to 2. Which is the theory that nowadays is being studied by Gromov, Meneghelli, and collaborators, which is the word line theory on the Wilson loop in n equal 4, which has this OSP 4/4. Probably here there is a star that I missed. So good. Any questions at this point? Motivations? Everything was clear. I screwed up everything. Good. So let me continue. I'm gonna do things in a way in which you should be familiar with whenever you've seen a CFT on a block decomposition, but I will immediately generalize, and I hope the way I generalize will be clear. So if you have a four-point function of external operator, P1, P2, P3, P4, this is usually what happens. So you have a bunch of propagators outside that gives you, which multiply overall the decomposition. Then I have the blocks here. And the blocks are weighted by the sum of three-point functions. And this is non-perturbative, so you still don't see anomalous dimension here because I'm not expanding the dimension of the operator that enters here. But now what I want to say is that the representation labels usually familiar with in conformal field theory, they are spin and twist or dimension. And here they will be labeled by a Young diagram with these two entries, lambda 1 and lambda 2. So lambda 2 will be the twist, dimension minus spin, and then lambda 1 will be lambda 2 plus the spin. So essentially this such amount of boxes, they just measure how much spin your exchanged operator are. And to have an idea, this xi here will be insertion points, and xij will be difference of insertion points. And as is well known, This is not a function of independently the four insertion point, but just a function of the cross ratios, which in my notation will be given by these cross ratios. And I think everybody's also familiar with the idea that the cross ratios are better parametrized by using a symmetric parametrization given by xx bar or 1 minus x bar. And as a simplest example of correlator, as I said before, you can think of a free theory diagram, which is just a monomial in u and u over v, and therefore it's just a rational function of this xx bar. XX bar is really notation in many papers, but it will make sense for me to introduce X1, X2 instead of XX bar, because then this index I will grow at a certain point of the talk. Now, this story is the usual bosonic story for bosonic ordinary CFTs. Now, I would like to generalize this story, including supersymmetry. And the best way to do so is to use harmonic superspace, which is something that was constructed in the past. Now, probably you never heard about that, but it's a very simple idea. And the idea is the following. So you consider your space-time to be a coset, and you will actually complexify space-time since... So for example, you can think of Minkowski in D-dimension as the following coset in which you have the SOD plus 2 complexified, and then you divide by Lorentz dilatation and special conformal transformation. Now, one matrix in this coset label a point. So let me give you the most basic example you can come up with, which is that of the Riemann sphere. So you can think of the Riemann sphere as the following coset in which you have SL2C, and you mod out by a group H, which is the subgroup called parabolic subgroup, which is the one made by the matrices of this form, okay? Of course, G is a matrix of SL2C, so the A times D minus B times C equal 1, okay? Now, for each orbit of this coset, you will take a representative, and the representative you can work out as this form here. So X will label a point of my Riemann sphere, and the representative here is a 2x2 matrix. And you can see, for example, that the matrix multiplication corresponds to the Mobius transformation on the Riemann sphere. So for example, if you take your representative, you multiply by a G of this form, you try to put it again into the form of a coset, so extracting some H, you find again something that looks like the representative, but now instead of X, you find some F of X. And when you work out what f of x is, you find again Mobius transformation. Okay, so this is a way to rewrite your space-time as a coset, and that's a useful thing to do because what will happen now is that my coset here, before in the Riemann sphere, was a point, and now will become a matrix. And now this matrix will have eigenvalues, which will be precisely the symmetric parametrization of the cross ratio, okay? So that's why I wrote before x1, x2, because I was studying a case of simple conformal symmetry, okay? And therefore I have a 2x2 matrix here, and therefore two eigenvalues, x1 and x2. Now, this same construction naturally uplifts to supergroups. The only difference is that now this matrix X becomes a super matrix. And the parabolic group wants us to mod out the complexified super conformal groups that we'll be interested in here. It's brought here in this line. Sometimes you might be, so for SP groups, you might be more careful and understand more of the structure of the matrix X, but let me skip these details. But I hope the logic is clear. So I have my representative, that's a matrix of this sort. Now X is labeling a point of my space, and I can diagonalize that, and that's when it's a supergroup, that becomes a supermatrix, and therefore I have a bunch of eigenvalues for the conformal group, and since it's a supergroup, I have a bunch of eigenvalues for the R symmetry part. Good. And now, now that I have my points in space-time labeled by matrices, by simple matrix multiplication, I can build the analogous of, let's say, one cross ratios, like U, the one I wrote at the beginning. It's simply matrix products with the inverse matrices, whenever at the beginning of the slides, I add here some stuff in the denominator. So as you see, this is a very simple generalization. And again, this will be a matrix, so I can diagonalize, okay? And now the eigenvalues of this matrix here will be the actual eigenvalues for the cross ratio. So apologies if in the previous slides I cheated a bit, but that was making you understanding. The real, the actual eigenvalues for the cross ratio will be these ones. And in these cross ratios, the correlator will be symmetric. I'm putting here a slash to just distinguish the eigenvalues of type X for the conformal part from the eigenvalues of type Y for the hard symmetry part. And now let's see how the OP becomes. The OP is simply given by a formula of this sort, in which you have some propagator, just to give you the right space-time dependence, or the exchange of some operator, labeled by, again, some Young diagram, okay? And now this is the operator that creates all the descendants of a primary operator O. And it's actually a simple, looks scary, but it's actually a simple formula. You just need to follow the indices. So this D here are just numbers, okay? And then you have a bunch of X matrices that have two indices, of course, and you need to symmetrize, anti-symmetrize according to how many ways you pick the derivatives with respect to operator. So the simplest case you can come up with is that when you take the first, the primary itself, so that means that the number of mu derivatives on top of lambda is just the same, so there are no derivatives at all. And so here you just have one matrix is x1, 2, aa prime, sandwiching the operator itself, aa prime. So let me be more specific about the way I represent the operators and the representation exchanged. For the case of the CFT I talked in the previous slides, of course, the operators exchange are the symmetric traceless. So what happens here when I have now a matrix, and what's the analogous concept of the symmetric traceless? It's actually the same. The only thing is that you need to be careful how to put the Dynkin labels on the Dynkin diagram that represents the group here. Now, for a compact group, there is a theorem that tells you representation are unique, but for the supergroup, there is not such a theorem, and that's why there are various superspaces you can construct. An harmonic superspace is one of them. That's about how you put this cross here. With this notation, what I'm trying to explain is that there will be a bunch of representation labels for what's the generalization of the spin, L in particular. Then there will be a bunch of labels for what's the generalization of the spin now for the compact group, which I will call A. Now, depending on the symmetry of the parabolic group, this will be distributed along the black nodes. And then there will be two labels, D, for the white nodes, and then a label B for the cross nodes. And this will be related to the twist for the conformal part of the group and the analogous of the twist for the hard symmetry part of the group. In fact, I can be even more explicit and write you a formula for converting the Dynkin labels to the labels of the Young diagrams. Everything is quite immediate. It just amounts to taking some of differences of the previous labels. The only important point I would like to emphasize is that the difference when you go from the bosonic case to the supergroup case is that in the supergroup case, the typical shape of a diagram is that of a hook. So let's say you have m rows here for the part of the conformal group, so that will be extended along this direction. And then there will be n columns for the parts of the R symmetry group that will be go now in these directions. The R symmetry part here has to do with this eigenvalues A that I was telling you before, and the conformal part has to do with this other representation label L that I was telling you about in the previous slide. Okay. Among all representation, then there are also the atypical representation. So a typical representation will contain a rectangle, which is n times m. Okay. So remember n and m, they were telling me the kind of supergroups, therefore the kind of conformal symmetry and R symmetry. The atypical representation are the ones that do not contain this rectangle. So for example, here I have take any NMN, so let's say 2,2, for example. And therefore here, if you have a box, so you have one row and one column, that will be some representation label for our, the exchange of an operator, which is of a primary operator, which is atypical. And this atypical representation have an important meaning because are the ones that built the protected sector. Now, to help again the intuition, let's me go back to this formula for the OP. Let me take the very leading term. So as I said before, the leading term is the one in which you're looking at an operator given by some representation label lambda, and then you pick no derivative, so mu is equal to lambda. And therefore, you just have something like x12 sandwiched with O. And then when you put twice into a four-point function, you get back to a two-point function and then some matrices X for the left and right OP. And now the two-point function, you have diagonalized them. And so up to prefactors, which it depends only count for the space-time dependence and the dimension of the operator they're exchanging, you see here that when you put all them together, you recognize this cross-ratio matrix that I wrote before. Remember the 1, 2, 2, 4, 3, 4, 2, 4, it's just a loop, so it's simple to remember. And again, with the indices, you don't have to do much, you just need to have to follow them as you do in other context. And here everything is explicit, so you can do the trace over this representation. And for example, when the lambda is just one box, the trace of the z is just the sum over the eigenvalue x minus 1 over theta, the sum of the eigenvalues y. And the minus has to do with the the fact that I was using a super matrix. And the 1 over theta has to do, is a 1 when I'm speaking about like n equal 4 Sobeyian Mills, but then it's 1 alpha 2 when I'm speaking about the OSP groups. So the general lesson is that a superconformal block constructed this way will have some prefactor of ratios of x and y's. And this is just to give you the starting point for the dimension of what is being exchanged. And then we'll have a polynomial of this sort, which is a character. And the character we'll be interested in are called the superjack polynomials that were introduced by Veselov and Sergeyev. And therefore, the superblock here will be constructed by taking this as a starting point and then summing over other superjack polynomials. And the punchline will be that I will have to find what each superjack polynomial is weighted by. And this is in general a triangular matrix, which depends on everything. Mu, lambda, the external charges, P1, P2, the dimension, space-time dimension, then the dimension of the operator. And the task is to find this matrix T. An advantage of doing this construction is that this superjack polynomial, they solve by construction the superconformal word identity. So one does not have to put by put by hand the constraint of superconformal symmetry. They are built in already in this formalism. So let me come now to the, after I've showed you how I'm going to construct the superconformal block, to the stability property. So the way I will construct the superconformal block will be finding in particular this matrix T, will be to solve some differential equation. And this is analogous to what you do in for the bosonic theory and what was done in the past by Dolan and Osborne. And when you look at what is this eigenvalue problem that you need to solve, you find that it's nicer for the function f, not for the actual b, but just f and b, they just differ from some overall normalizing prefactor. And you realize that, first of all, C is some collogenous outer Hamiltonian related to BC type root system. Again, as a similar statement that was made by Chomerus some time ago. But the important thing is that this eigenvalue problem, in this eigenvalue problem, the eigenvalue just depends on the representation label, does not depend on the number of eigenvalues I have, so m for x or n for y's. So this just depends on the representation label. Then I am expanding a function f in terms of object, which themselves are stable, so do not depend. As long as I am allowed to do that, I can simply contract the number of variables, and I will get the same polynomial. And it comes out that by construction, the full function f is stable. So it will only depend, this coefficient t, since this guy is stable, will only depend on the Young diagram mu and lambda. They will not depend on the specific theory that I'm working with, which was labeled by M and N. In particular, if you want to translate this statement for the polynomials to this function f, this is the analogous statement. Notice that the function f here, as I was saying before, it's in general an hypergeometric type of function, so it will have an infinite expansion. It will not just be polynomial. So the fact that this function f is constructed by some triangular matrix T, which only depends on the Young diagram mu and lambda, is a very powerful information. So in particular, what does it mean? That to find the triangular matrix T, I can do two kind of things. I can either solve the problem in which the function I'm looking for is an hypergeometric, so it has an infinite series, or I can solve the simple problem in which the function I'm looking for is the one in which I collapsed all the eigenvalues of type X, so the conformal groups, and I'm just looking at the compact group. And in that case, that function is a polynomial. Now, if it's a polynomial and it's a representation of a compact group, it must be known in the literature. And in fact, it is known. And in the process of discovering its precise name, we called it dual BC-Jacobi polynomial. And we call it dual because the standard way of representing BC-Jacobi polynomial is through a function which is not stable, and therefore one has to do some operation to make it stable. On the other hand, by construction, the internal block, so the one that corresponds to the compact group is directly stable, and so that's why we put a dual there. It will also acquire a meaning when I go back to the Cauchy identity later on. And now the point is that I can find this matrix T eventually just solving a problem of polynomials. And then to have a function which is not polynomial, I will just need to substitute the correct p that goes from being the one for the compact group to the one for the supergroup. So in this example that I'm telling you about, in the first case, p is just some ordinary polynomial when I'm solving a Jack polynomial, when I'm solving the compact case, and it will become a super Jack polynomial in the case I'm interested in a specific supergroup with given m and n. And theta. So this is what we call the supersymmetric uplift. Essentially, it's about understanding that the function I'm interested in is seed by an object that depends only on the Young diagrams. And then the part that depends on the superconformal symmetry is just a character, the superject polynomial, and that I can grow it to the supergroup or collapse into the compact group or collapse into the conformal group, depending on the situation I'm interested in. But the matter of the game, so the triangular matrix T, that's only depend on Young diagrams. And so changing the superject polynomial from compact to conformal or super, it's what we call the supersymmetric uplift. Now, the physics way of finding the matrix T is, as I was telling you before, rewriting that differential equation on the basis of the superject polynomials so that you find a recursion for this matrix T. And now the recursion, what can it be? So you start with a diagram, and then the Casimir operator you are solving either puts a box on the diagram or the Casimir operator, you can see it as some built-in by operator which are diagonal for the superject polynomials, or operator that are a raising operator, which simply raising or lowering operator in the sense that they add or subtract a box to the Young diagram in consideration. So depending how you want to add and subtract or put the recursion in a passive or active way, that's the generic structure you come up with. And the only thing that is important to notice here is the way this rational function depends on the external parameter, which were the dimension, the external dimension for the external operator, then gamma. And in particular, the numerator, now you built up this combination, which are gamma p12 or gamma minus p43. But then the denominator depends itself on gamma. So from here, you can understand that the gamma dependence will be the complicated one. And instead, the alpha and beta dependence will be the simple one. And in fact, you can redefine some reduced T such that you can get rid of this product and just focus on whatever the recursion gives you from the numerator. And since, as I was telling you, this T just depends on the diagram, you can unpack this notation here. And when you unpack the notation, you can either be on the rows. Okay, so now your diagrams are labeled by rows, mu1, mu2, mu3, lambda1, lambda2, lambda3, in these directions here. Or you can unpack the notation to be along the columns, so which means along the columns I will denote the representation in the diagrams with a prime, which means my Young diagram will be labeled by a table of number that goes along the rows, along the columns. It's a fun exercise to show that whenever you fix the Young diagrams, shape the Young diagram, these two different formula, because they are two different sums, they depend. This depends on mu prime, this depends on mu, they actually give the same number whenever you specify the data. So if you're solving a problem just for the conformal part, perhaps it may be more intuitive to look at a representation of the recursion of this fashion. But as I was starting to tell you before, it's actually the same as thinking of it as solving the case in which you are just along the columns which would be the case for the compact group. Finally, there is a SUSY way of combining the representation along the columns along the rows. And this is motivated by the fact that there are Young diagrams that enter this T whenever I'm interested in superblocks. They have this hook shape that I described before. And therefore, for the hook shape, it's nice to have a sum running a little bit on the rows, as long as I go from row 1 to m, if m is the number of, let's say, conformal dimension. And the sum split now along the columns, so from 1 to n, whenever I'm solving the part of the recursion that runs on the compact group. So in fact, the shape of a superblock in general will be as follows. So remember that there is that's specified by some external Young diagram lambda, and then you sum over the other mu. In the OP way of understanding this sum, that I was summing over all derivatives. And now mu can be the same as lambda, but then it can grow. And it grows because the Casimir operator on solving, as I said before, adds boxes on lambda. So mu is given by acting with mu with all boxes in all possible ways, which are at most of the hook shape you're interested in. And now when you add boxes, you will run, first of all, on some atypical representation, and then you will run generically on typical representation. So if your starting primary belong to some atypical representation, then it will be labeling a protected operator. And therefore, this sum will run, first of all, on a typical Young diagram, and then at the critical point in which you merge with typical diagram, and you keep going up to infinity within the hook shape. On the other hand, if you start from a typical Young diagram, then you will just add the typical diagram. So in this way of doing things, you don't have to worry about distinguishing protected and long operators in diverse dimension. They are all on the same footing. What changes just the initial range of the summation. This is a very convenient thing because constructing operators, constructing superblocks for protected operators is usually hard. What you know, for example, in N=4 is that long superconformal blocks, they are the simplest structure possible. They're just given by some prefactor times some reduced block for the conformal part and the compact part of the group. And this is not true for atypical representation, in which this is not the only structure that appears. And so then you need to go and try to invent yourself how to fix that structure with the superconformal word identity, and so on and so forth. But here, everything is already automatic. You just need to sum over this character labeled by representation. And the only point is that if you are interested in a protected operator, then you will start from some atypical representation. And therefore, you will have a bit of structure which is atypical up to the point that you reach the typical one. So I mentioned the case of θ=1, which is the simplest that you can think of. But the case of θ=1 can also help you when you consider a theta different from 1. And the point is that in many cases, you can think of the OSP groups as simply giving you a doubling of the number of variable x and y's that you would have for the θ=1 case, the SLN case. And therefore, if you have classified the structure for the SLN case, then in some times you can study the cases for θ=2 or 1/2, just taking a limit in those structure. And the limit in general will involve some, let's say, x1 that goes to x2 for the whatever double the eigenvalue we were looking at. And therefore, the generic structure when theta is 2 or 1 will be some rational function times some bosonic blocks, and then some derivatives structure over acting on bosonic blocks. And this is nice because it can be classified starting from SLN rather than OSP. So now let me move in the last 10 minutes to the math side. So I told you about... sure.
The number of columns, is it bounded by 4 or something like that? Or?
Yes, so whenever... I said this at the very beginning. The groups I'm interested in are the following ones. Okay, they will be labeled by some M and N. M is essentially counting the number of conformal dimensions, and N is essentially counting the number of compact dimensions. And therefore, the Young diagrams I will be interested in general, whenever M and N are turned on, have a hook shape in which at most you can contain this n to the m rectangle. So you can have, let's say this is the case 2,2, so I can have at most 2 rows and 2 columns. Whenever I'm looking at a character of this 2,2, in which I take a diagram with, let's say, another box here, that automatically gives 0. So it's not included. So M and N, they are related to the supergroup I'm studying, and they fix the number of maximal rows or maximal column that I can sum over.
So typically, you can have almost 2 columns or something like that.
Yes, 2 columns of 2 rows. So 2 rows will be the usual case of conformal symmetry, conformal group. So
you don't have the dense diagram, big diagram.
No, the correct. No, the general case is just a thin hook. It not a fat hook. Yeah.
What is the best use of this formalism? Well, what's the place where, for example, n equals 4? Isn't that enough to argue that we already know how to do everything, and it's in other theories that this is useful, or even in n equals 4, this would be useful?
No, in n equal 4, you already know everything. And because Paul, some time ago, just resummed for us. All this function f when you're studying n equal 4, which would be the case theta equal 1. And this function f, they just give you some structures and times bosonic blocks, essentially. So you don't have to worry about redoing this. Yes, they are this form. It's just that Paul resummed that for you, so you don't have to worry about this formalism.
I see. So it was done already before?
Yes, in the 2015. I think they're the ones you used sometimes.
Yeah. Okay, very good.
Yeah, yeah. You are actually one of the few that used the right block. I remember in your.
There was some laws in the literature that were giving negative 3-point functions.
Yeah, yeah, those are not the right ones. But I remember in a paper of you, you have the right one. A paper with Benjamin.
Yeah. Okay.
And precisely that point, if I remember correctly, was about the protected part. Because I was saying before, the protected part is, even in for n equal 4, has more structure than this. The protected part has more structure than this, because this is just the part for typical diagrams. But when you're looking at a protected representation, so let's say here is empty, you sum over all, this is a typical one, and this they don't have factorized structure. These are the ones that count, if you wish, what people refer to the single variable function or the constant, which comes dressed with its own kinematics, but is more complicated than this simple product. And in fact, theta equal 1 is a very special case. Whenever you depart from theta equal 1, so you're looking at 2,0 or a BJM, here you turn on all possible structure from the very beginning. So there is no simplifying case for the long versus protected. The only thing that you can do here, the best is to start from something like this and then take a limit in such a way that you can classify the structure and get structure which has multiplying by rational function or multiplying some small operator with the derivative as well, because you've taken some limit x1 going to x. Yes. So yeah, just I want to mention here some fun math fact that we came across. So the construction I explained to you in the previous slides just comes from physics, right? I started with some harmonic superspaces, started from some correlation function. I promoted the points to be matrices, and then I looked for some solution of a Casimir operator. Then I discovered that when I was reducing the supergroup just to the compact group, I was ending up with some polynomials. And these polynomials, of course, had to be classified already. And in fact, they were related to some BC-Jacobi polynomials, but the interesting thing is the way they are related to the BC-Jacobi polynomials. So here the symbol J tilde will mean the compact or internal block. This is related to this Jacobi polynomial that you can also find on Wikipedia, for example. And the point is that the representation label has to be complemented, and then you need to invert the variable and multiply by some overall factor in such a way that this is, again, a polynomial, since here you inverted the variable. So the two operations that you need out of the BC-Jacobi polynomial to get the internal block are invert the variable, add a prefactor, more importantly, take the complementation of the Young diagram that was labeling the operator you were interested in. Now, complementation is what ultimately will feature in this Cauchy identity that I was telling you about. Yes, so I think I can cut this. And the only information that you might want to know from the math side of what I told you is that the way the math people describe these Jacobi polynomials is through a formula which is again of the same form as the function f I was describing for the block. But now this, that for me was the matrix T, now it's some other matrix S, which is given itself by evaluating some other polynomials. So this is a cool formalism. Rather than finding S from a recursion, you construct some other auxiliary polynomial P called interpolation polynomial that when you evaluate them, they give you precisely those numbers that you would get from the recursion. And the only subtlety here is that these BC-Jacobi polynomials, they are not stable. So in fact, you see that this matrix S depends on N, okay, which are the number of variables Y I'm studying. On the other hand, the J tilde does not depend on N, as I was emphasizing in the previous slide. And in fact, this formula here tells you how you are gonna fix S in such a way that it becomes an object which does not depend on N. And the way it does it is you need to just understand what the complementation, which is the second operation in the previous slide, does on the matrix S versus the matrix T. And so you see that whenever you take S of some n variable, but then you look at the diagrams which are given by taking the complement of some other diagram, and the complement depends again on n, this old guy n is well defined, doesn't depend on n, just depends on the Young diagram. So from the point of view of physics, the construction of mathematics is more complicated because it involves some function S which is not stable, but then this function S can be stabilized and you get the same as the matrix T that I described from the recursion. There are various extra subtleties with this matrix S which have to do with the way the dependence on the parameters shows up. For example, here you don't see gamma, which had to do with the dimension, you just see beta. So you might wonder where is gamma here? You can make manifest where is gamma, and actually when you do that, many formulae look a lot more illuminating. But let me skip this part. And let me close again with telling you in the end how you get to this superconformal Cauchy identity using the stability property. So here I just draw a diagram for a free theory diagram that you might think of, given by some prefactor, which depends on the external dimension, and then is labeled by gamma and kappa. So gamma is just the number of lines that goes from 1, 2 to 3, 4. So in this case is 2. And kappa, depends on the convention, is just the number of lines that either go from 2, 3 or to 1, 4. So in this specific case, it will be 0. When you express this ratio of propagators from insertion points. In terms of the cross ratio, you generally find a formula like this, which is what you expect, some rational function, which is polynomial in the Ys, the compact group, but is has an infinite expansion in the X, the conformal part, okay? And the trick is that you can mimic a free theory diagram just by specifying this function S for some label that depends on K. So in this case of this diagram, K would be zero. So there would be no S's, so essentially this will be one, okay? And the task for the block decomposition is to find what's the coefficient which weight the sum over superconformal blocks when you decompose this simple rational function into more complicated function, which are this block that I construct. Now, the point is that the idea of the proof is simply this. The left-hand side, so this rational function here, is stable, so you can turn off the variable, and then you get the same function with less variable. Therefore, the right-hand side also should be stable. But now, the right-hand side, when it's written like this, looks scarily complicated, because this F might be, if you're looking at some supersymmetry, this might be an infinite hypergeometric, so this looks complicated. But as I told you, you can reduce to the case in which actually you have no M, so this is just a polynomial. And then when you do so, rather than looking at the block themselves, you can look at the expansion of this in terms of the same polynomial P that label the sum over descendant in the superblock. And then the trick will be that I will take this P and I will apply the inverse. I will put here some matrix T times matrix T to the minus one, and I will construct on one side the superconformal block, and on the left hand side, on the other side, what is the value of this coefficient A. Now, to do so, it's convenient to do the following. You just take this, and you slightly twiggle this Young diagram lambda prime, which is summed over, okay? You twiggle in such a way that it becomes this complemented Young diagram with respect to some big rectangle M times N, okay? And now here you recognize the same building block as this dual Jacobi polynomial, which are actually internal blocks. So you simply apply, as I was saying before, T and T to the minus one, and so on one side you will get for free the compact block, so dual Jacobi polynomial. On the other side, you will get whatever comes out of the computation. And nicely enough, whatever comes out of the computation is some Jacobi polynomial here with a specific identification of parameter with respect to the external dimension. So since I told you before that the Jacobi polynomial is not stable, what makes this formula stable, since this left-hand side is stable, is precisely this identification of parameters. Notice also that this type of identity is pairing lambda here with lambda, okay? But when you think of it as where this lambda was coming from the point of view of the function you are constructing, this was coming from complementation. So you're just having some big rectangle and you're summing over diagrams which are complemented with respect to each other until you fill the full rectangle. So after a while that you work with the formula, they are kind of intuitive in a sense. And nicely enough, doing it this way, you also recover some known identity. Actually, this is one known identity found by this mathematician from a different perspective, starting for more complicated polynomials. So now,
Francesco?
Yes.
How
1 minute.
One
yeah, one. So, now that we have a formula in which I have just the compact blocks, I can immediately use the supersymmetric uplift So I go from a compact group, a compact block that depends only on the y's, to a super conformal block that depends on z, so also the x and the y's. And I similarly do the supersymmetric uplift on the left-hand side. So I get back to my function. But notice that in doing this maneuver here, this coefficient remain the same. And the point is that they remain the same because they depend only on the Young diagram. Note also that this is a quite a remarkable formula, because now when this is promoted to have a conformal part turned on, then this is a kind of an hypergeometric function. So this is an infinite expansion. Of course, this is also an infinite expansion if I expand small x. And therefore, you stepped from something that was polynomial here to something that was of hypergeometric type, essentially for free. It would cost you a lot more effort to find this formula from the conformal, just from the conformal group, but you can get it for free starting from the polynomials, which is the point of stability. So let me finish with the conclusions. So we solved the problem of finding superconformal blocks in diverse dimensions, in particular the ones that we were interested in. So for the 2,0 here in 6 dimension and for ABGM in 3 dimension. Those will be the input to study more systematically the CFT data of the holographic correlator that have been constructed recently by Aldai and Zhou. We hope to find in a similar way some organizing principle. In a similar way that there is a Cauchy identity, probably there is also something like a Cauchy identity at one loop. We will see. But the starting point is on very solid ground, so our formalism clearly encompasses all the protected and long blocks. And then on the math side, we provide some precise relation between the mathematics of the BC symmetric function and our physical construction of the superconformal blocks using stability and the supersymmetric uplift. And finally, we managed to write the conformal partial wave expansion of any free theory diagram by using a Cauchy identity. Which for me, that was a very beautiful result. I was not expecting such a simple way of finding the conformal partial wave expansion of free theory diagrams the way, since I did it for n equal 4 some years ago. That caused me some pain. It's actually here straightforward. And finally, perhaps for discussion, if people are happy to hold, the connection with mathematics becomes fruitful not only for the way we think about the proof of some statements, but also because in mathematics they developed not only similar formalism for the symmetric function they are interested in, but also a formalism in which you deform the blocks by adding a Q parameter or going elliptic by adding some QP parameter. Now, this is usually not the type of deformation you're interested in the CFT. This kind of Q or elliptic deformation, they arise in a different context with quivers and partition functions. In particularly, when you think about quivers, this tau parameter is never related to the dimension of the space-time. So here for us, instead, the theta parameter was related to the dimension of space-time. So eventually, here we landed on some type of different uplift from polynomials to symmetric function alternative to this one, which would be nevertheless interesting to understand whether there is a deeper connection. It's just a mathematical fact about being able to deform some classical function to the Q or elliptic. Okay, thanks.
Okay, so let's have this paper. And maybe if there are questions. Okay, I would like to ask a question.
Yeah.
At the beginning, you mentioned that your results apply to maximal supersymmetric theory like ABJM and 2,0. What about dimensional conformal, superconformal field theory?
Yeah, they also apply in that case. In that case, Yes, that's the case in which, depending on the supersymmetry of your theory, so you can start from example from here and continue in two dimensions, something which is 4,4. And then you need to take the 1D block and not just take the tensor product of those. There we span a basis for the two-dimensional blocks with 4,4 supersymmetry. And then you can do a similar thing for other blocks. For example, this is some n equal 8 theory in one dimension with this theta equal to 3. Then you can construct some exotic theory in two dimensions, which feature some tensor of this group, similarly like this. It depends on the theory you are interested in.
Yes, so.
So the usual thing is like 4,4, you can get it from taking tensor product of the 1D block.
Since your measuring theory is constructed in 2D, starting from maximal supersymmetric in different dimension than D equals to 2. But if you set theta equals to 0, you can do that, right? So you will have
here
into dimension.
Sure, this would be. Okay, these are just the usual bosonic block in two dimensions, which are just the product of two F1s symmetrized.
Yes, because there you have no supersymmetry. But
exactly.
What if you have also supersymmetry? Can you?
Yeah, if you have supersymmetry, and let's say the supersymmetry is 4,4, you take.
But theta should be zero. That's what I want. That's what I don't understand. Or
No. Here, theta goes with the. Theta will go with the dimension if you're looking at bosonic groups, but will be in a different way if you look at the supergroups.
So, for example, in the case of the superconformal theory, which would be dual some ds3.
Yeah. It's.
It applies.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No problem.
Other questions? Let's see. There are questions from the audience, too. It's only one participant. Okay, so let's thank the speaker again.